I think like he has an interesting character. In one hand, he's like from the old generations, experienced like the world in such a different way. So the way he thinks about music, he really cares about like the tradition and that we know the history and we respect the history. And on the other hand, he works for so many years with young musician. So he's really open-minded. He know that the world is changing. So he's always like in on the spectrum somewhere. And that's super interesting.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. This podcast strives to inspire you through the personal stories of a diversity of musicians worldwide with in-depth conversations and great music that reveal the depth and breadth to a life in music. This week's episode is with the wonderful harmonica player and composer Arielle Bart. I first started listening to her music with her debut album, In Between, in which she presents a unique approach to the harmonica, and all her albums feature her original music, which is inspired by the European jazz tradition and the Middle Eastern world. Arielle began playing the chromatic harmonica at the age of 7, and since then it's been her primary instrument. We're including music from several of her albums in this episode. You'll hear about some of her inspiring mentors and collaborators and her positive experience at the New School University for Jazz and Contemporary Music in New York City, including working with Reggie Workman, Shai Maestro, and Jane Ira Bloom. We also talked about the music business and her delight in using storytelling and film with her music. Like all my episodes, you can watch this on my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast on all the podcast platforms, and I've also linked the transcript to my website, leahroseman.com. Besides being the host, I take care of all the many jobs of research, production, and publicity for this podcast, and I really do need the help of my listeners to keep this project going. Please consider buying me a coffee through my support page, which is linked to PayPal. Finally, before we dive into the episode, did you know that this podcast is in season 4 and that I send out a weekly email newsletter where you can get access to sneak peeks of upcoming guests and be inspired by highlights from the archive? Have a look at the description of this episode where you'll find all the links. Now to Arielle Bart.
Hi, Arielle. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I am such a big fan of your albums. They're some of the albums I've listened to the most that I've bought on Bandcamp, just as a composer and a player, just incredibly beautiful.
Thank you.
So it's a great honor to have you here today. A lot of people won't be familiar even with the chromatic harmonica necessarily. And it's interesting to me that it's been your main instrument since the age of 7.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always been my primary instrument. Yeah, actually, it's kind of like a family story, basically. We used to listen with my mom to a lot of like music with the harmonica. Stevie Wonder and Bob Dylan, Neil Young, the Beatles, mainly diatonic harmonicas, the blues harps. But Stevie Wonder, he was like the main chromatic harmonica that I discovered. And my older sister, she really fell in love with the instrument, and it was her dream to learn how to play the chromatic harmonica. So she found like an orchestra, a youth orchestra, really, really nearby my house back then. It was founded by an Holocaust survivor who brought the harmonica from Germany and founded an orchestra here. So I basically followed her without thinking too much, like a younger sister. And we started with playing some classical music and some arrangements for like folk Israeli music. It was a big orchestra, like 30 harmonica players. So it's quite big. And only after that I started learning like with private teachers and discovered like really the instrument to the core.
Okay, that's really fascinating. Is that orchestra still around?
Actually, yeah. I think it's getting smaller and smaller over the years. Budget and, you know. But it's still happening, which is great because nobody plays the harmonica.
Yeah, you should visit them and inspire them.
Yeah, you're right.
Does your older sister still play?
No, she's not playing anymore. I mean, just as a hobby, yeah. But she played until like a later age, like until she was 18 or something. Yeah.
And your melodic writing is so beautiful. I'm curious, when did you start composing?
It's a good question. I think like the beginning for me was when I was 18. I was studying in a program in Israel. It's basically a four-year program with the New School University in New York. So you do 2 years in Israel and then 2 years at the New School. So a lot of the people who I studied with, they were already composing and producing music. And I mean, the quality in Israel is really good from a really young age. And I came from a different place, so I was like, I didn't really get the process yet. So basically the first song I composed, it was an assignment for something. I really struggled. I remember this. I didn't know how to approach it at all. But I remember the first time the band played my song at the school, it was the best feeling ever. I remember the exact moment. And ever since I'm playing with it, I guess.
Do you play some piano, especially for composition?
Yeah, I compose everything on the piano. I barely use the harmonica for compositions. Everything is on the piano. And I have a rule, like the things that I cannot play on the piano, and it's not my primary instrument, so the things that I cannot play on the piano, I don't write them on the paper. So I have like two choices, is like to find another solution for a melody, for the harmony, to write something else, or to really practice until I can play it on the instrument. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I was curious about your program in the New School and some of your mentors. But before we get into that, I do like to include music early in an episode, so people who've never heard your music will be able to hear that.
This is In Between from a live session, and it's the title track to Ariel's album In Between. Please check the links in the show notes for all the music featured in this episode.
Thank you.
I have interviewed one other harmonica player for the series. Have you heard of Brendan Power? He's a harmonica builder. He builds custom harmonicas. He's based in England, originally from New Zealand.
Ah, I think I know the name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting discussion and completely different background where he discovered the harmonica, I think at age 19 or 20, and then it completely changed the direction of his life. And he's all about creating new harmonicas, basically, and custom harmonicas. But I'm curious about the chromatic harmonica, just as a music mm-hmm. nerd. So most people just buy the one in C because it has all the notes, or do you have many different harps? How does that work?
So basically, the harmonica I'm using, I have like 100 harmonicas, okay. but they are all the same, exactly the same, same model, same, everything is the same. And the chromatic harmonica is basically, it's like the piano in a way. I can show you maybe. So the instrument is in C, so all the white keys. And then if you press the button, then it's like everything goes half step above, like the black keys. So basically with the chromatic harmonica, you don't really need to change a key. You do everything by yourself. Specifically in my instrument, I have 4 octaves. Most of the chromatic harmonica players, they use 3 octaves. I have one that's lower. So it's a pretty wide range. Yeah, but the reason why I have like so many instruments is basically that it goes out of shape really quickly.
Okay.
My way of playing is quite aggressive. So I'm just like destroying the instrument often. I mean, compared to other instruments, it's a cheap instrument, so sometimes it's not worth fixing anything. You just buy a new one. So it really depends.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you do bend notes when you play.
Yeah, and this is why my instrument's getting like out of tune constantly. Yeah.
So how is it you're doing that physically?
Oh, it's a good question. It's basically lips muscles, the pressure you put and release. Okay. I'm not using my tongue or anything else, only my lips, and by blending the note you just like put more pressure and release it, more pressure and release it, and then you can control the waves of the tuning. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you do use some vibrato. Is that coming from your diaphragm, your lungs, your muscles down there?
No, same, my lips.
Okay.
Other players, they use other body parts. Me, I'm using only the lips. Some people for vibrato, they're using like the hands, I don't know, the cheeks, the everything, the tongue. For me, it's like everything. Like I'm using these muscles for vibrato, for blending, everything.
Okay. Is that the way you were taught?
I'll tell you what, because it's not like an instrument with a lot of like repertoire, a lot of history, a lot of players, there isn't a real method. Mm-hmm. So, and like the technique of the instrument is not really like developed in books. So you learn the basics from teachers, but then eventually I think like each player develops his own technique. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from my perspective, this is the way it works. Even my sister, and we studied with the same teachers, she plays like in a really different technique. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
That's very interesting.
It's interesting, yeah.
I was wondering, Arielle, I mean, would you be willing to play a little bit, and then if you don't like it, we won't include it, just to have...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want me to play? Anything specific?
I love all your compositions. Really.
Okay. I'll go with, I don't know. We'll see. Let's see how it goes. Maybe I'll take a step back so you'll see the instrument because I hold it like quite low. Mm.
That was really beautiful.
Thank you.
So, if I didn't recognize, is that one of your...
It was... No, nothing. I mean, not a specific composition, just the nothing.
Improvisation.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I was wondering, Arielle, about your improvisation, because it's... You're an incredible improviser, and I was curious if you had listened to different styles of improvisation growing up, or...
Growing up, I don't think so. I used to listen to a lot of, like, jazz music, but I didn't really put, I think, an extra attention to the improvisation. It came only later in my life. But yeah, I think like till this day, I'm using two different styles of improvisation.
You mentioned the New School, and I was curious to even look at that program and see what it was about. It's quite interesting, the whole idea of teachers as mentors and some of the people you worked with. A lot of pianists. You also worked with Jane Ira Bloom, the saxophonist and composer.
Yeah, amazing. One of the best, really. Yeah, she's so special. She's very, like, it's hard even, like, to explain the attitude of this woman. I studied with her, like, some private lessons, but also I was in her, like, ballad ensemble. And she's very, like, precise with what she wants from us in terms of, like, how do we think about melody? How do we sing the melody in our head? We needed to know the lyrics of everything. So yeah, she is really like going into the core of the melody. And then until you know the melody in your heart, then you can start talking about improvisation and like explore some stuff. But if you don't know the melody, you don't know the song. So don't try to play other things around on it, because you disrespect the melody.
In that,
that's the idea.
Yeah. So in that ballad class, was it mostly singers and horn players, or were there also pianists?
Also pianists, also a drummer. He needed to play like the melodies on his drums. He needed to sing the lyrics. Okay. So yeah, it was like a full band.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And I noticed there were world music ensembles at the New School. Were you involved with any of those?
Yeah, I took an Indian music class, Indian ensemble. I think R&B ensemble.
And did you get playing opportunities in New York as a student there?
Yes, not that much, I have to admit. I was there only for like 2 years until COVID and I was super busy with school. Also, like the transition, like just like moving to New York, it's a big like slap in your face. So it takes time like to understand how to be yourself in the city. So I played a little bit, mostly in an interesting way, it just happened mostly in the free jazz scene. Like free improvised avant-garde music. Yeah. I studied with a bass player, William Parker. He's like a big name in the like free underground scene in New York. And then I did some projects with him. So most of the opportunities I had in New York, it was in the avant-garde noise music. Yeah.
Yeah. And you also, you had listed Reggie Workman as one of your mentors. Did you get to work with him?
Yeah, Reggie, such a sweet guy. Yeah, Reggie, he was like my instructor in like a lot of ensembles. And also I did like one project with the band that he founded, and we went upstate to play a little bit. Reggie is a very, very special guy. I think like he has an interesting character. In one hand, he's like from the old generations, experienced like the world in such a different way. So the way he thinks about music, he really cares about like the tradition and that we know the history and we respect the history. And on the other hand, he works for so many years with young musicians. So he's really open-minded. He know that the world is changing. So he's always like in on the spectrum somewhere. And that's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he had worked with Art Blakey, John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk. Did he ever tell stories about any of those times?
So many stories. I cannot even tell you. I mean, I don't remember anything specific, but he tells you stories, like tons of stories every day. He has,
Okay. And I noticed you just worked with a lot of pianists. Some of them I hadn't heard of. Some of them I had, like Shai Maestro. Were there any pianists mm-hmm. you worked with who really helped you with your composition?
Yeah, I think like also like in terms of private lessons, most of the teachers I've studied with, they were piano players. Anat Fort, mm-hmm. she's an Israeli pianist, and Shai, of course, and I studied with John Coward in New York and Aaron Parks. Yeah, mainly piano players now that I think about it. Yeah.
It's interesting to me, I'm a classical violinist, and in our world, it's still kind of like you basically have your one teacher, even in graduate school. So this idea that you were able to have lessons with so many different artists, is that particular to that school, or is it more the jazz scene, do you think?
So that's in the, I think like in general, the jazz scene is more open. You take one lesson with someone, you go back and forth a lot, but specifically at the new school, that's the idea of this school, that they don't really have a faculty. You basically can reach out to any musician you want in the city, and if they accept you as a student, you can go and study with them. It is different with some instruments, like they have like some, I don't know, like some rules. So like guitar players, they need to start with the guitar player. Piano player, they need to start with the piano player. And then you can like go beyond that. For me, there aren't really so many, you know, like harmonica players. It's a rare thing. So from a young age, I always studied with like people who plays different instruments. Drummer, saxophone player, piano player. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that's influenced you?
That's interesting. I think about it often, honestly. I think it gave me like different perspectives about like a composition, about a band, the way I listen to things. With the drummer, I worked mainly on rhythm. With the piano player, I worked on harmonies. With the saxophone players, I worked on like articulation. And the fact that I don't really have a method that fits perfectly the harmonica, I had to explore it by myself, you know? So I think it also gave me, like, in terms of like sound and technique, something that I cannot really say like where it comes from, what is my inspiration, where is like my melody sense is coming from. Everything like is a bit like of a blur. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, even in like my composition, I think it gives me like a wide perspective.
Okay. Hi, just a short break from the episode, which I hope you're enjoying so far. If you want to check out over 100 episodes you may have missed, in addition to your podcast player or YouTube, I have an extensive website, leahroseman.com, with show notes, transcripts, the complete catalogue of episodes, and you can sign up there for my weekly newsletter to get access to sneak peeks of upcoming guests. Please do share your favourite episodes with your friends, follow me on social media, and share my posts. And if you can spare a few dollars to help support the series, that would be amazing, and you can find that link in the show notes. I'm an independent podcaster, and I really do need the help of my listeners. Now back to the episode. I've listened to your albums a lot on Bandcamp, and then actually just this morning, Arielle, I was looking at some of the videos that I hadn't really noticed before on YouTube, and like you have this teardrop, this kind of narrative video, and your music, it's very, it's obvious it could be used in all kinds of contexts of storytelling. So where did you get the idea for that? And I know you're writing for film. Is that sort of a way, your direction you're going in?
So I really care about visuals. This is something that I pay like a lot of attention to. We shot a teardrop in Belgium. I had an idea of like shooting something with people. For me, like the song is very like, it's, you repeat like the same melody over and over again. It's like the harmonica is like flowing above this like constant thing, like quite heavy things, and then like I'm flying above. And for me, it's just like, it created like two layers. And for me, I always think about people. So for me, like the heavy things, the more like big thing is like a community, a culture, a group of people, whatever. And then like this one person, the lonely person, the underdog, the whatever, someone who's trying to fit in. So that was like the, initially that was the thought for the video. And then I worked with like two amazing like directors, young people in Antwerp in Belgium. And we created this together, and we shot everything on film, like analog equipment. So it was just like a super interesting experiment as well. Yeah, for me, like eventually the video for me is like, you're looking at the main character, you see that he's going through something, but so many things are going like around him, but he's so in his own head that he cannot like pay any attention to everything else that's going around. And from the other people's perspective, they don't see him.
Okay.
They don't see what's going on. They're just like going around. There's some rain. They're living their own life, but someone very close to them is going through something, but they cannot pay the attention he needs, you know?
Yeah.
Now you're going to hear Teardrop from Ariel's album Documentaries.
And your most recent album, The Trio Project, you released this video the same time. Is the music on the video the exact same tracks that are you released on?
Yeah. It's recorded live and was shot live. Wow. Also on film, everything is analog. So everything is live. It was quite an experiment, yeah.
It's really powerful, really amazing.
Thank you so much, thank you.
And so the childhood video that you included?
Yeah. We basically project them on a wall and we shot them again with the film camera. Basically, I discovered tons of materials from my childhood that my father took with an old video camera. So I have hours of videos and recordings. So I just playing with it a little bit, did some editings myself, tried to edit the music, the sound recording, and I improvised over it. Then eventually I decided to include it in the project.
Okay. Yeah. When I first heard it, it was just the audio and it was the sound of your voice. And I knew it was probably you because you're saying your name. And
yeah.
It's really, it gets to you, but then the title, do you want to talk to that?
The title of the song or the title of the project?
Well, the title of that song is Listening to Shame, right? Where you include you.
Yeah, listening to Shame. It sounds like a cliche, but I think all my songs in a way it's a cliche. But basically it's the inner shame, the inner child within yourself, the things in you that you feel shamed about. But you have to live with them. You need to make peace with them. And that's the constant struggle.
Okay.
I think it's a maybe a common experience for most of the people in the world.
Yeah.
This next musical selection is from the Trio Project, Part 2, Listening to Shame. You'll find the links to all the music and videos included in this episode on Ariel Bart's website, linked in the show notes of this podcast.
Rag me.
For Riel.
For Rieli.
Me Ariel.
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 It's I'll be curious to see where your art goes in the future. Have you talked about collaborations with, I don't know, different artists in different media, like theater or dance or film?
Yeah, I wrote one project for theater, and I did some things for like a fashion shows, a short film. Yeah, I think like the media that attracts me the most is video, and I'm really interested in like film scoring. I also studied that a little bit at the New School.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know. We'll see where it's going.
Yeah, I really love your tune. Well, I wanted to talk about your association with cellists, because also the complement of your ensembles is a little unusual. So did you start working with cellists because you knew the people and their playing, or because you wanted that sound under the harmonica?
Both. I have a really good friend, like a cellist, and I think like through her I got familiar to the sound a little bit and the quality of the instrument, and then it was natural for me. I think like only after like we played a little bit together, I understood like the interesting atmospheres that the blend of these instruments creates. Like basically for me, like the idea is that the harmonica is super metallic instrument, like high range instrument, like always like above. The tuning of the instrument is higher, it's 40-42.
Oh.
Yeah. So everything feels like you're going to the sky, basically. And the cello is much more grounded. It's much more like heavy, much more, you know, like, yeah, it's a grounded instrument, lower instrument. So for me, like using these two as like the, I don't know, like the bottom and the top, then you have a lot of space in between to fill it with a lot of things, with piano parts, with drums, with improvisation, with sounds, textures. You have a lot of space in between. Mm-hmm. So I think this is what I like about this combination.
But I think Mayu is featured on Time is Blind.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very beautiful.
Correct.
In fact,
yeah, she's amazing.
I discovered you through her, because she was playing in a duo with Kelly Toma, who I interviewed last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was that connection. I was looking to see what else she'd done on Bandcamp, and then your album popped up that you just released. So.
Okay. Wow, interesting. She's a good friend of mine. Yeah.
And then on your most recent album, I was really interested to learn about...
Talia?
Yes.
Talia Erdal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
she's basically a classical cellist. She's playing like at the Jerusalem Symphony. Yeah, now we just came back from a tour together, so we're playing quite often recently. She also has like a special touch.
And she's also a singer and composer, I noticed.
Yeah, she has a solo project, really cool project. She sings and plays the cello, yeah.
So you were on tour recently in France and Germany?
And France and Luxembourg, okay. And we're going to Germany next month.
Okay. So around the time this will be released, actually. Are you playing mostly your own material at these gigs, or do you mix in other stuff?
Only my own material, yeah. Only original music of mine, yeah.
Okay. You had started a European Jazz Masters. Have you continued that?
I quit. I did one semester in Berlin. Are you familiar with the program?
I researched it. I was curious to learn about it.
Okay, so the idea is like a two-year program. Basically, you have a home base. So mine was Berlin. So you do the last semester and the first semester in Berlin, and then you go to two other European cities during like the rest. So I started in Berlin, it was amazing, I really had a good time. Then I moved to Copenhagen, and I decided to quit after a week. Not because of Copenhagen. Copenhagen was amazing. But already in Berlin, I felt like I got what I needed from there. For me, it was the connections, the people. The pianist I'm playing with now, like regularly, I met him on this program. So I felt like I've made strong connections, and now I need like my free time to create, to make music. Yeah,
that makes sense. Maybe we could talk a little bit. Are you teaching at all now, or have you taught quite a bit in the past?
A little bit. I feel like I need to grow up more in order to do that. Maybe to, I don't know, like to establish my method in a way. I feel like I have the knowledge, but it's not like I don't know how to explain what I know. I don't know. It's not organized in my head. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is the main reason that I'm not doing this now.
Yeah, I understand that. I started teaching quite a bit when I was around your age, in my mid-20s, and I really knew nothing. I hadn't taken any pedagogy courses. And it's been quite an evolution. I mean, now I've been teaching for 30 years. Yeah. And I was speaking to Ji-Yoon Kim. She's a classical pianist who's created quite an interesting career. And she was saying, you know, despite the fact she had all this education, she had a doctorate, but she realized she couldn't teach a five-year-old at the beginning stages. How do you teach? So she went back and did a master's in pedagogy. And she's, okay. So, you know, we talked about that, like you need to be able to teach to different, you know, styles and strengths and different levels. And it's a whole thing, right? It's not.
Yeah, it's a big world.
Yeah. I'm always curious to know about music education, you know, having gone through myself and feeling now what was missing from my education. And it seems like for the younger generation, there's better options. And I noticed there were required music business courses.
I think for the whole 2 years, it was mandatory. Actually, it's amazing that they do it.
Yeah.
it's so necessary. Honestly, I feel like I learn the most from just like experience, you know, like just doing the things on my own. But of course that it was like a big lesson at the new school, you know, just like understand what is like royalties and copyrights and label, how do you approach a label, what is like the idea of a booking agent, why do I need it. So yeah, I think like in a way, like half of the job as a musician is the business. There are so many talented musicians, talented instrumentalists, but if you cannot handle the business, or you don't want to, or you don't have like, I don't know, you don't have like the option to do it, then it's really hard to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so of the help you've gotten professionally, what have been the elements that have helped you? Has it been publicity agent or booking agent?
It's a good question. I think like none of these things, it's the idea that you need to look like widely on all these things, that you need to put like an effort in all these areas. You need like to split the cake into like, I don't know, 8 pieces. You need to put some effort into booking and like recording, then a label, then publicity. You can release an amazing music, but how do you bring it to people? How people, I mean, so yeah, I think it's the whole thing. I'm still learning, you know, I'm super young. Yeah. I did nothing in my life. So it takes time, but yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting talking to you because I'd say the majority of the people I talk to in the series have had long careers, and they're, you know, often reflecting back on the experiences they've had. And a few times I talk to young upcoming stars like yourself, and it's interesting to see kind of where you're at. But of course, you've been playing so long as well. It's not like you're new to music.
Actually, it's always like I'm going back and forth with it, you know. Sometimes you put so much effort on the business part and you don't have the maybe you have the time, but you're not in the right mindset.
Yeah.
So how do you keep this balance that you can do these together and still be happy and creative? And So that's a mission.
Especially with social media, right? It can really suck your focus away.
Yeah, it sucks.
This next clip is a short excerpt from Ariel's new duo project with guitarist Omri Baragiora. The album is called Deep Down. I have this album and it's beautiful. Here's a small taste.
Do you set aside time for creative time, and do you separate composition at the piano from improvising on your harmonica? How does that work for you?
No, for me it's always been like I'm going like all over. Depends what I feel at the moment, what I need to do at the moment. I don't really have like a schedule or like I don't know. I can be really out of focus. I can play like the harmonica for like 30 seconds, then I'm going to compose something for 2 hours, then I'm going back, and like, yeah, I don't really have anything, any structure. Mm-hmm. This is why I like practicing with other people, because then I can get like, I feel like the obligation to be in focus.
Yeah.
But also I get some feedback and I get like, I mean, that's a good thing to do. I really recommend.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, being a musician can be so lonely, you know, so many hours just learning your instrument, learning your tunes.
Yeah, being with yourself in like, I don't know, like in a dark room for 10 hours.
Have you ever had trouble with neighbors objecting to the sound of the harmonica?
Actually, no. No. Yeah.
That's. I was just curious because it could
have been lucky.
Yeah, it could be piercing if it's going through the walls.
Yeah, that's true.
And for your booking agents, is it a novelty that you're a jazz harmonica player? Are clubs welcome and theaters welcoming to that, or is it a bit of a barrier?
Probably both, in a way. I think. So far it's been mostly it's like benefits me because people are looking for like something unique, something special. I'm also a woman that plays a unique instrument, so it fits a lot of boxes that people are looking for nowadays.
And your playing is, I find, very vocal. Do you sing just for yourself?
Not at all. I'm a horrible singer.
Really?
You don't want to hear me. Yeah. But I think, like, I mostly listen to singers. I rarely listen to instrumental music.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I was thinking your recorded track of Nine Souls, which is so beautiful with a frame drum. It's very atmospheric. And then I saw your solo video, which is just this incredible solo improvisation by a river for 10 minutes. Was it intended to be that long, or you just went?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's like a photographer in Israel. It's his project. It's called like Take a 10 Minute Break.
Yeah.
So it takes like very specific instruments, Arabic instruments, some unique instruments that can play solo in the nature, wherever. And so it should be like around 10 minutes.
Okay.
That's the project. But it's not like a complete improvisation. He really wanted me to play like a song, a melody, a form, to give it like some structure. It was difficult. Yeah.
This next clip is the ensemble version of Nine Souls from the album Documentaries and features Mayu Shviro on cello. If you heard my episode with Kelly Toma last year, her duo with Mayu is featured on that episode. And if you'd like to hear Ariel's solo harmonica version of Nine Souls, I will link it in the show notes. It's on the YouTube channel Take a 10-Minute Break.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really, really compelling. Well, thanks so much, Arielle, for sharing your perspectives and your music today. Really a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please do share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support this series, that would be wonderful. The link is in the description. Have a wonderful week.